Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
A new novel explores race and community through the experiences of two black sisters, twins, who live in very different worlds. One who decides to pass and live life as a white woman with a white husband and a white child, and the other who returns home to live life as a black woman with a black child. Kirkus Reviews calls Britt Bennett's The Vanishing Half, quote, assured and magnetic, expertly paced, a tour de force. It calls up Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye. You may have read Bennett's debut novel, The Mothers, which was a New York Times bestseller, or you may have read a piece she wrote that went viral after Officer Darren Wilson killed Michael Brown in Ferguson, Missouri. It was called I Don't Know What to Do with Good White People, and it is sadly as relevant today as it was 6 years ago. Britt Bennett, welcome to All of It.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Sure, I want to talk about your novel, but do you mind if we talk about your piece a little bit, just given what's been going on?
Sure.
So everything in this piece that you wrote still holds true today. You share your father's story in the piece. Will you share with our listeners what you wrote about?
Sure. So I talked a bit about my father, who told me a story about when he was a young man working for the deputy district attorney's office. He was pulled over and held at gunpoint by LAPD, who was accusing him of some crime. And he was just so shocked that he did nothing. He just sat there on the curb, and he felt like that was really what kept him alive. So I kind of use that as an entry point in that essay to think about just the idea of not only police violence, but just the murkiness of intentions. I think that that was something that really struck me, the idea that these officers probably did mean well. They were probably trying to do their jobs, but the result could have been my father being killed.
And what made you decide to write the piece initially? Was it your dad's story, or was it the particular reaction to Mike Brown?
I think it was all of those things. Mm-hmm. I think it really was. It was an intense moment of kind of these back-to-back non-indictments with the officers who killed Michael Brown and also the officers who killed Eric Garner. And I think thinking about sort of my family's story, my parents both came from these black communities, my mom from a rural Louisiana community and my father from South Central Los Angeles. So they came from very different black communities, but had these experiences that shaped them in race that are very different than mine. But that was kind of a through line I was able to use to connect to these non-indictments and still the lack of justice to these police officers who killed unarmed black men.
And in the piece you write, most of my white friends have responded to recent events with empathy and outrage. Some have joined protests. Others have posted criming while white stories, a hashtag that has been criticized for detracting from black voices. Look at me, the hashtag screams. I know that I am privileged. I am a good white person. Join me and remind others that you are a good white person, too. Over the past few weeks, I've seen good white people congratulate themselves for deleting racist friends or debating family members or performing small acts of kindness to black people. Sometimes I think I'd prefer racist trolling to this grade of self-aggrandizement. A racist troll is easy to dismiss. He does not think decency is enough. Sometimes I think good white people expect to be rewarded for their decency. We're not like those other white people. See how enlightened and aware we are? See how we are good? What is something that you would want a white person to think about in this particular moment?
You know, I think that, you know, one of the reasons I think I really wrote that essay was because, like I said, my upbringing in northern San Diego County in the 90s was so different than the upbringings both that my parents had. I had a lot of good white people in my lives, as I say in the essay. I had neighbors, mm-hmm. I had friends, and that's something that would have been so unthinkable to my parents. But at the same time, that kind of forced me to negotiate these racialized encounters in a different way than I think that they've had to negotiate them. So, you know, I think that's part of why the essay resonated with people. I think a lot of people of color kind of related to that experience of sort of the exhausted that you feel navigating these. And I think also a lot of white people maybe uncomfortably saw themselves kind of in this moment of trying to assert their decency over trying to actually be anti-racist and trying to do the work that requires of you.
My guest is Britt Bennett, the author. Let's talk about your new book, The Vanishing Half. I really, really enjoyed it. So the story's so interesting. It takes place in a small Louisiana town called Mallard. Am I saying it right?
Mm-hmm.
mallard, like mallard duck. And the residents and descendants, they're all from the town founder. And it's a town full of light-skinned and very fair black people. And the town is color-struck. And they live by a strict color code. Would you read a little bit of your first chapter from page 5 so people can get a sense of what you're writing about?
Sure. Sure, thank you. It was a strange town. Mallard, named after the ringneck ducks living in the rice fields and marshes. A town that, like any other, was more idea than place. The idea arrived to Alphonse de Sore in 1848 as he stood in the sugarcane fields he'd inherited from the father who'd once owned him. The father, now dead, the now freed son, wished to build something on those acres of land that would last for centuries to come. A town for men like him, who would never be accepted as white, but refused to be treated like Negroes. A third place. His mother, rest her soul, had hated his lightness. When he was a boy, she'd shoved him under the sun, begging him to darken. Maybe that's what made him first dream of the town. Lightness, like anything inherited at great cost, was a lonely gift. He'd married a mulatto even lighter than himself. She was pregnant then with their first child, and he imagined his children's children's children, lighter still, like a cup of coffee steadily diluted with cream, a more perfect Negro, each generation lighter than the one before. Soon others came. Soon idea and place became inseparable, and Mallard carried throughout the rest of St. Landry Parish. Colored people whispered about it, wondered about it. White people couldn't believe it even existed. When St. Catherine's was built in 1938, the diocese sent over a young priest from Dublin who arrived certain that he was lost. Didn't the bishop tell him that Mallard was a colored town? Well, who were these people walking about? Fair and blonde and redheaded, the darkest ones no swarthier than a Greek. Was this who counted for colored in America, who whites wanted to keep separate? Well, how could they ever tell the difference? By the time the Veen twins were born, Alphonse de Sore was dead, long gone. But his great-great-great-granddaughters inherited his legacy, whether they wanted to or not. Even Desiree, who complained before every Founders Day picnic, who rolled her eyes when the founder was mentioned in school, as if none of that business had anything to do with her. This would stick after the twins disappeared. How Desiree never wanted to be part of a town that was her birthright. How she felt that you could flick away history like shrugging a hand off your shoulder. You can escape a town, but you cannot escape blood. Somehow, the Veen twins believed themselves capable of both. And yet, if Alphonse de Sore could have strolled through the town he'd once imagined, he would have been thrilled by the sight of his great-great-great-granddaughters. Twin girls, creamy skin, hazel eyes, wavy hair, he would have marveled at them. For the child to be a little more perfect than the parents, what could be more wonderful than that?
That was Britt Brennan reading from her new book, The Vanishing Half. So, is this based on any place?
So this is based on a story that my mother told me about a town that she remembered from her childhood. And she kind of told me the story very offhandedly once about a community of people who were intermarrying so that their children would get progressively lighter with each generation. And it was something that struck me as so absurd and very disturbing and also very captivating. And I started to think about what it would be like to live in a place like this and also what it would be like to escape from a place like that.
Was there anything particular you wanted to explore about colorism?
I mean, I was interested in colorism as an embodied feeling. I think that mm-hmm. was what I was interested in, is not just the sort of structure of it or these kind of larger, these larger issues of people receiving, privileged treatment and our beauty standards being determined by color and all these other things that affect our lives, but just the experience of what it feels like for somebody to feel some type of shame or disowning their own body. So I was really interested in the idea of growing up within that mentality and how much work it takes for you to separate yourself from it.
What did you want to, well, let me rephrase that. How does the role of community play out in this story of these two girls, one of whom passes, one of whom actually returns back home? They both run away, we should say. And
right.
the separation of the two happens when they have run away.
Right. Yeah, I think that there are a lot of very fraught representations of community mm-hmm. in this book. The first community that you meet is this town, which I was just describing the part that I read from, and these characters who feel, the twins both feel a degree of ambivalence about this place that they're from, and eventually escape it just to kind of have these larger lives. Like, they feel very trapped in this small town, and that's why they end up escaping and going to New Orleans to live life there. But then Stella, who's the character who passes for white, she finds herself in a very different community once she has passed, and she kind of joins this sort of moderate West Coast LA community when she ends up in Brentwood and in the suburbs there. So I think these are characters who are always finding themselves in these fraught communities and trying to find where they belong within them.
My guess is Britt Bennett. The name of her new novel is The Vanishing Half. Why did you make them twins?
You know, I think that twins were a pretty natural way for me to kind of think about identity in this book. I'm always pretty interested in sisterhood because I have two older sisters, so I'm always curious of kind of what makes us similar and what makes us different when we have the same parents and we grew up in the same house. So I think the idea of these women being twins, sharing genetics, sharing their upbringing and their lives splitting in such a dramatic, divergent way, I think that was a way for me to kind of explore that.
Talking about the way life, where they have internalized different traumas in their life. When they're little, they see their father, Leon, lynched by a group of white men. How does it affect each of them differently?
Yeah, I really thought of that as a very central event in the book. This is a horrific thing that they witness. And not only do they witness, but they really have no way of making sense of it because it's inherently illogical. You know, like, racist violence has no logic to it that you can wrap your mind around, let alone when you're a child. So I think it really does affect the twins in a different way. I think for Stella in particular, it makes her very fearful. You know, she's constantly haunted by these nightmares that she finds herself unable to really discuss with anybody when she has passed and become a white woman. She can't tell anybody about that part of her life. So she's left to kind of silently suffer and you know, seek safety where she can find it because she's constantly feeling hunted because of this thing that she's witnessed. And I think also just the fact that the twins find themselves unable to really talk about this moment with each other because it is so horrible and it is so traumatic. And that's something that I think begins to drive a wedge between them from a very young age.
Several reviews have compared your writing to Toni Morrison's. In the New York Times, as Jude is the daughter who comes back with one of the twins' daughters comes back, and she's very dark-skinned. She comes back to this town of Mallard, and people are just horrible. The New York Times writes, as Jude suffers the viciousness of her color-struck town, it's impossible not to think of Pecola Breedlove in The Bluest Eye. In Stella, with her indifference to convention, you can tip into chilling cruelty. We feel some of the affinity of the heroine of Sula. First of all, how does it feel to be compared to Toni Morrison?
I mean, completely surreal. You know, it's a huge honor and compliment that people are reading this book against those books, which are books that I love and I admire. And I think of Toni Morrison as such a foundational artist for me. You know, I feel like her books are really embedded within my DNA. So it's an honor, and I'm deeply honored.
And the character of Jude, this young, because when we first meet her, it was funny when I was reading, I thought, okay, are we going to spend a lot of time with her? And we ultimately do spend a lot of time with her as a young woman. You know, it's not just about the twins. It's about the children as well. When you were thinking about Jude and having Jude return to Mallard, where she would be treated so poorly, why did you have them return and why did they stay?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I think for me, I was interested in both the experience of what Jude would have growing up there, which, as you said, is obviously going to be horrible for her. But I was also really interested in how she carries that with her and how she tries to move beyond it as she grows older. So I didn't want to only focus on her as a child. I wanted to see her as a woman. I wanted to see her out in the world, still trying to push beyond this really insidious ideology that has been fed to her since she was a kid. So I think, you know, Desiree and Jude arrive. Desiree's escaping an abusive marriage, so she's kind of returned home to lick her wounds a bit. And I was interested in the way in which they are escaping one form of violence and seeking comfort within another form of violence. That's a different form of violence. And it's not a physical violence in the way that that was what Desiree had been experiencing, but it is definitely a form of emotional and mental and spiritual violence that Jude experiences growing up in that place.
So while Desiree returns to Mallard with her daughter, and she works in the local diner, and she takes care of her mom, and, you know, she has some ways it's a difficult life, but in other ways she has a real sense of herself and her community and a sense of belonging. On the other hand, you have Stella, who has passed. What does Stella have?
Yeah, Stella is a tough character, I think, to for me to write, in part because a lot of the choices she makes I find very difficult to ever imagine myself making. But, you know, she's a character, she's very guarded, she's very private, and she ends up marrying a white man, she moves to the West Coast, has a child, and then constantly just feels alone. You know, she feels like a fraud, she feels very afraid that she will be found out, that she'll be discovered. And she finds herself trying to navigate all of that within this white community. And when we meet her, has just recently learned that a black family might potentially move into the neighborhood, which definitely makes her feel that they will discover her secret and that her life will come crashing to a halt.
To find out what happens, you have to read The Vanishing Half by Britt Bennett. Britt, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.